This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
Rabble.ca.
Hi, I'm Wayne McPhail, and I was one of the people that originally started the Rabble Podcast Network, and I think that you should support the Rabble Podcast Network and Rabble.ca because there's no other place where you're going to get such a diversity of voices speaking truth to power.
The Rabble Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Show your support by going to rabble.ca/donate.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
Just over a week ago, the UK Parliament passed the Investigatory Powers Bill. This leaves only the formality of royal assent before it becomes law. The bill legalizes a range of tools for hacking and snooping that is unmatched anywhere in Europe or even the United States. 3 years ago, Edward Snowden revealed to the world the terrifying extent of phone and computer surveillance conducted by secret agencies on behalf of the US, Great Britain, and other Western countries, including Canada. Just as important as the scope of the surveillance, the documents Snowden leaked revealed the extent of cooperation among Western countries in their spying. This new snooper's charter just passed in Britain may have enormous implications for Canadians. Michael Vaughan is a lawyer as well as a policy director at the BC Civil Liberties Association. She joins us by phone from her home in Vancouver. Hello, Michael.
Hello.
I mentioned in the intro that this bill legalizes the surveillance tools already in place. What's significant about that distinction?
Well, as you say, this is very bad news for surveillance among one of our very close allies and, in fact, partners in security intelligence. And one of the things that we know about the way that security intelligence has been operating for quite some time is we see a very troubling trend. To find out at some juncture, be it through an Edward Snowden-type revelation or through an oversight body doing an audit or through a court case, that they have been breaking the law. And then ex post facto, we find the government essentially blessing their law-breaking by passing a bill, making it fine, go ahead, carry on, as if it had been merely a noble experiment in keeping us safe, that they were unmoored from the powers that they had been given by our democratic representatives.
So in other words, this is really just the spying that's been going on for at least 10 or 15 years or however long it is the government has just put a stamp on it and said, that's quite all right, go ahead.
Yes, definitely. Some of this is sanctioning what we have every reason to believe, and certainly the evidence was piling up, had been happening for some time, and some is making inroads, again, in dangerous new directions in terms of digital investigations powers by security intelligence and sometimes a raft of government agents, like we've seen with Bill C-51. It's known in Canada. It's no longer a bill. It is the law in Canada, where you have unprecedented information sharing among really almost all federal agencies, not just what we traditionally think of as security intelligence.
You mentioned that Canada is a partner, a close partner with Great Britain in an alliance. I think it's called Five Eyes. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. The Five Eyes, and I guess this is somebody's idea of a nifty branding, the Eyes, you see the word eyes as in the eyes that you see with. The Five Eyes, the security intelligence partnership that exists among the U.S., the U.K., Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. Now, the powerhouses of this alliance, no one will be surprised to find out, are the U.S., and to some degree the U.K. And so what is troubling for us here at home is partially that our good friends and allies in the UK now have, as I say, these sweeping new surveillance powers that will surely affect them domestically. But also that in some regards it affects our information because, again, their snooping powers can often affect our communications as we communicate along any channels that they have the ability to survey. But more directly, perhaps, the pressure that it puts on Canada to, quote-unquote, harmonize our laws with theirs. In some way, when you have these kinds of alliances, you have tremendous pressure for what would be essentially a race to the bottom. And we're already seeing this. We're in the midst of a national security consultation right now, where you will see in the government's green paper when they say, well, you know, why don't we let the police do this? Some democracies in the world do, you know. And so, again, you see this kind of pointing to the worst-case scenario in terms of sweeping surveillance powers and saying, you know, justify why we don't go that route, as opposed to saying, dear government, justify why you think these powers are proportionate and constitutional. So that kind of pressure is something that we should be very alive to.
And, of course, Canada is usually the more subordinate party in this alliance. In other words, they don't follow our lead, we follow theirs, right?
You know, I don't think it's the case that the NSA is knocking on our door and asking us what we think should happen. No, you're exactly right. The term harmonization makes it pretty clear that somebody else is playing the tune, and we're harmonizing with them. And as I say, we have every reason to believe that the lead by a goodly stretch would be the U.S. And as I say, to some degree, the U.K. has really been forging ahead in the race to the bottom, if you will.
I know Canada is currently undergoing a review of our security apparatus. You can go online and submit your comments and opinions, and they even have a green paper that you can download and read to help you carry along. How this new security bill, do you think, affects this security review that's currently underway?
Well, as I say, you see the finger pointing already, right? Well, we should do what our allies do. And that was even before the Investigatory Powers Act 2016 in the UK was passed, although there were great indications that it was going to be. I think at this point, you know, one of the things that's important when we're having this really unprecedented opportunity to, as ordinary citizens and individuals in Canada, to directly input into the government machine our views on national security. So if we say, would you like to make a submission to the national security consultation, it sounds a bit daunting. Who knows about national security? It's all very complex and half of it is secret. But the sense of saying, as an individual who lives in Canada, I'm concerned about these sweeping powers. I'm concerned that the justifications haven't been put forward. I'm not sure this is making us any safer. I'd like to see more explicit democratic debate about the need for these essentially very dangerous powers. That kind of input, again, we've never had an opportunity, although you can, of course, always write to your elected representative, we've never had the government call for a temperature taking. And so it is, it's an immense opportunity to look at what's happening in the world with our allies, the direction of this. You know, Edward Snowden used to talk about, however comfortable you may feel with the government of the moment, remember that all the powers that you leave intact could be used by the next government for what he terms turnkey tyranny, right? You've got the architecture for a massive surveillance system, even if you trust the government of the moment, and not saying that you do or you don't, but even if you do, that architecture remains for governments of the future. And, for many people, that's a sobering thought just at this very moment.
Well, I know, of course, down in the United States, a lot of people are saying exactly that sort of thing, now that President Obama is about to leave in a couple of months and President Trump is going to step into the Oval Office.
Exactly. The powers that exist within the U.S. system through executive orders and various other things are extreme. I think that's part of we need to understand here. Everyone has a desire, and it is part of our constitutional rights to have fundamental security. So the sense of saying, well, we have to stay safe. You know, this is not controversial in any regards, but the extremity of particularly the digital investigation sphere, the surveillance on our everyday communications is just unprecedented in the history of the world. And I think we have to grapple with what a radical proposition this really is for a government to have tentacles into every citizen's ordinary life. What does that mean for democratic process? And although I think, you know, many people bewail or feel the sense of, you know, the world changing in this regard, we really haven't grappled yet very effectively with how we're going to put appropriate checks and balances into this equation.
I'd like to back up actually a little bit now and maybe get into a little bit of the detail about specifically what the new Surveillance Act in the UK outlines. What does it allow the security agencies to do?
Well, one of them, it's very interesting. There's several of the things that it actually allows us to do, interestingly enough, turn up in our government's green paper, querying how we feel about some of these potential powers. So, for example, it compels companies to decrypt data on demand. So you will hear in our green paper the government putting forward the proposition that police are increasingly foiled in their efforts to investigate crime by encountering encryption. So that's one of the things, compelled decryption, that the new UK law does. The other thing it does that we're also, again, coincidentally having our government query is mandates data retention. So in Canada, for example, you have the ability to get a preservation order as the police. And so that means if you were to go to an internet service provider or a telecommunications service provider and you were worried that it was going to take you some time to get a search warrant and the data might be gone. Maybe they purge their data on a regular retention schedule that wouldn't allow you time to get a warrant. You can get on a very, very low standard a preservation order saying don't dispose of this. I'm going to go off and get a warrant. What data retention, which is where the UK has gone, says you just keep everything. Everyone is de facto a suspect in case the police would like to get access to it. So that sweeping data retention in the UK forces internet service providers to retain data on all websites of people. Any website you visit, any people in the UK who visit a website, that data on what they visited will be held for up to 1 year in case they turn out to be somebody that the intelligence agencies would like to investigate. So you can see when you start, you know, using any of these propositions, you're essentially turning the presumption of innocence on its head. Everyone is inherently suspect. That's why we hold your data. That's why we essentially undermine your ability to successfully secure your data through encryption. You know, these are the kinds of things. And then the other major component of the Snoopers Charter is it gives the security agencies massive, massive authority for hacking. And that, of course, is something that we are very alive to in the post-Snowden era, the ability for governments to take over, hack into, again, the tools of our everyday communication and business.
How much longer do Canadians have to go to the government's website and make their opinions known on the security review?
Originally, the deadline was looming, but it has been extended till December the 15th. And as I say, if I have if I have a plug for the National Security Consultation, which has never happened before, it is to be undaunted by you know what you feel you know or don't know. If you have even an opinion, a feeling, a concern, that in and of itself is worthy of putting into the consultation. You don't have to be an expert on national security to have views as a concerned citizen.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Michael, for telling us about this bill. It is quite terrifying, and I'm glad we can still have a chance to voice our opinions.
Thank you for having me on.
I've been speaking with Michael Vaughan, Policy Director at the BC Civil Liberties Association. To learn more about the Investigatory Powers Bill, one good source is the Open Rights Group, based in London. You can go to their website, www.openrightsgroup.org, and click on the Campaigns button near the top of the page.